Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Paddock Project. I'm your host, Tiggy, and today we are going to be diving into F1 storylines to watch in 2025. Before I dive in, if you're listening to this on Apple or Spotify, there's also a video on YouTube, so you can watch the video version of this. I'm going to be trying to do more and more video podcasts and interviews, so head over to YouTube if you want to see the thing as well as listen to it. I know I said literally last week that you probably won't be hearing just me solo on here talking to you, and that is still true, but today it's just you and me. So let's dive right in. I've split these storylines into racing and business, for lack of a better term, but just general happenings in and around the sport that are not exactly to do with the on-track. So on the racing side of things, storylines to watch. First up for me is the driver market in 2025, and there are three main narratives that I'm thinking about in this space. I think the first thing that comes to mind, because it's probably the most immediate thing that we'll see in the headlines if it ends up panning out, is Franco Colapinto. Some people predict that Jack Doohan will not last more than 5 races at Alpine now that Franco Colapinto has been announced as Alpine's reserve driver. Whether or not that's true or fair, what is true, I think, is that Jack has a lot of pressure on his shoulders to perform. Franco is good. He's had the chance to prove himself at Williams in the car for many races last season. But, and this is a big but and a very important but, he also brings one of the most engaged fan bases the sport has seen in a long time. If you just scroll through like the Williams comments or the Alpine comments when he got announced, they're all in Spanish. They're all about Franco. It's just, there is so much love and energy that he brings with his fan base to the sport that I think is hard to ignore. And with Checo leaving, there's definitely something to be said for that Latin American fan base and having somebody to root for, with Franco being from Argentina. Obviously, we also have Gabriel Bortoleto, who's from Brazil, and so we'll see how much of that fan base he brings as well. But for whatever reason, Franco seems to have the most engaged fan base that we have seen in quite a long time. And I think with that comes a lot of money, a lot of energy, a lot of engagement, and teams love that. It is a business after all. So Franco Colapinto is very high on my list in terms of people to watch out for in 2025. Next up in the driver market is Red Bull, and there are a couple things here. First, the car. How much has the car improved from last year, or if it stayed the same or worsened, how much will Max be able to mask that with his talent? We saw a lot of that last year, and we saw Checo's struggles, and whether or not that was the car, that was Checo's performance, or a mix of both, it still begs the question of how Red Bull's car is going to perform. That also brings me to the question of how much Max Verstappen will even want to compensate for a car that is not top of the grid. And so that brings the question of what does the future hold for Max? I think in 2025, we will get a much clearer sense of whether he will stick with Red Bull, go to another team, even potentially retire. He's going to become a father in his own right this year. So there's a lot in store for Max. And if Red Bull is not delivering in terms of the car, I do think we may see him go elsewhere. That lines up with the 2026 regulations. And the question that begs is which team is going to fare best in 2026 when it comes to that new set of regulations? Honda is leaving Red Bull for Aston Martin. That's a big blow to Red Bull. And especially as we think about a new regulations era, Honda has had a lot of experience and a lot of success in Formula One. We'll get into Aston Martin a little bit later, but I think we could see Max potentially go to Aston Martin or even Mercedes for 2026 and beyond if Red Bull is not delivering. On Aston Martin, I said this on Threads, but I think it's going to be a massive, massive growth year, couple years for them as they get Adrian Newey, they get Honda, they have a new factory, they're pouring so much money and investment into that. Obviously, they're going to have to think about their driver lineup and who is best suited to be in that car, which is a big open question. But if Alonso ends up retiring, if Stroll decides to move on, could we see Max? Could we see Yuki with the Honda connection? I think there are going to be big things for Aston Martin, and we might see some of those wheels start to turn in 2025. As relates potentially to the driver market and driver market announcements. I haven't listened yet, but I'm really excited to listen to the interview that Aston Martin put out with Andy Cowell, who's the new CEO and team principal, kind of talking about their world championship dreams and what it's going to take to get there. So definitely probably worth checking out, and I will be doing that very soon. One more thing on Red Bull when it comes to drivers and the driver market is the concept of their junior team and their junior program. I think Zak Brown, we've heard him be very vocally against a team having two teams in Formula One. So we're thinking about Red Bull and VCARB here. And there are a lot of arguments that it's not actually serving its intended purpose. You know, we saw with Yuki that he had been growing up in this Red Bull junior driver program and did not get a chance at the Red Bull seat. Granted, it did go to Liam Lawson, who was part of the junior Red Bull program. So I guess there's some debate on how well that's really working out. But it hasn't seemed to work out for them incredibly well in the past in terms of training these young drivers in the AlphaTauri, in the VCARB, in whatever it will be called next for this Red Bull seat. And I don't know how much of that is the Max Verstappen factor versus that model just not really working for them. It's kind of unclear, but I think in 2025 we'll start to maybe see a little bit more details about that. We'll see how Liam Lawson fares, and that might help shed some light on the viability of that program. Something else in 2025 in terms of the driver market is rookies. I think this is the year of the rookie. It's going to be fascinating to see who flies, who falls. We went from a year with no rookies to one where over a quarter of the grid is a rookie, and that is crazy. I think there's this interesting phenomenon as well of these really young 20-somethings lining up against kind of veteran greats. You think about Alonso, you think about Lewis, both over the age of 40 now. And so it's going to be kind of fascinating to see the old and the young duel it out and see how these teams fare with the many rookies. We're going to be doing a whole episode on rookies with a very fun guest, which I'm excited about. So stay tuned for that. I'll be diving more into my predictions on who I think is going to do really well and who might not, but more to come there. I'll just add, as we talk about these kind of veteran greats, I'll add about Lewis, is just a quick note on him, is the question of how much longer we think we'll see him in the sport. It seems to be the consensus that Ferrari will be his last chapter, but if he wins a championship, I think he'll retire immediately after, whether that's the first year, whether that's the second year, I don't know. If it stretches beyond those first couple years, how long will he try to keep that dream alive? I don't know if we'll have many answers to that in 2025, but I think we'll have a good sense of how Ferrari is working with Lewis, how Lewis and Charles are working together, and what that dynamic looks like, if it seems possible that Lewis will get that eighth. Okay, so that's about the driver market. Second big thing on the racing front for me is, when does it become clear that teams and drivers are focused on 2026 instead of 2025? Cars are so different for 2026. The concepts have already been released. Definitely recommend checking those out. We did a whole episode on our sustainability series about what are the 2026 regulations, so definitely go listen to that if you haven't already. But what it does introduce is that with such a massive regulation change on the horizon, teams are facing this difficult strategic balancing act of, do we push for 2025 success or do we prioritize 2026 development? And I think these decisions will impact the racing that we see on track this year. And my guess is that the teams with rookies in 2025 are probably seeing this a little bit more as a development year, maybe not really optimizing for the absolute best car in 2025 at the expense of 2026. I think the big focus will be on really trying to train these rookies up and hit the ground running for 2026. Maybe that's a reason we're seeing more rookies on the grid this year. I don't know, but I think we've seen historically that the teams who get the regulations right in the early years tend to run away with it or have a higher chance of running away with it in terms of dominance in that era. So I think that's a factor. The factor that's interesting to me as well is that Lando and Oscar are likely to be in the hunt for a 2025 driver championship, which makes me think that McLaren may be the team that is focused the most on optimizing for 2025 performance. Not necessarily at the expense of 2026, because I think they'll want to go into that era just continuing momentum, having really hungry drivers, getting more world championships, all of that. But I do think what is true is that they have more to fight for this year than many of the other teams on the grid. So I think that we'll see McLaren really focused on this year in terms of performance. And third storyline on the racing front, I think, is the racing calendar and whether or not F1 has stretched beyond its limits. I think the question that gets asked many times is F1 and its team personnel at a breaking point? Have they overstretched their limits with a 24-race calendar, a 6-sprint weekend calendar, a calendar regionalization that's not quite ideal yet? when you're flying all the way across the world. And I know they're working on it and it takes time, but it's not quite there yet. How much can F1 sustain where they're currently at? And how do they grapple with this growing and delivering what fans want while not taking advantage of or having that be at the expense of the people who are working in and dedicating their lives to this sport? And that's a really hard balance because you have a ton of demand. You don't have as much supply or as much resources to necessarily meet that demand. How do you get around that and how do you keep people engaged at a critical point in this sport's growth? And so I'd actually been thinking about this a couple weeks ago in terms of predicting some rotational announcements coming this year. And then literally the next day, Spa jumped the gun and that announcement dropped that they're going to be rotating starting from 2028. And so my thoughts on that is I'm all for making room for other race locations like Rwanda or somewhere in Africa because it's long overdue, or Thailand or Argentina, or even bringing back some of the classics like Zandvoort was announced to be dropping off the calendar, Barcelona, if that's actually where it's going, versus just giving more races to the markets that are willing to pay for them at the expense of some of the fans who may not be in those markets or may not have the means to attend races that are incredibly expensive. And so I think there are some regions where that's the case. I won't name names, but if we do see F1 starting to go more in that direction, I think that would be a waste of this rotational opportunity that they have. One concern that I do have around rotating is the sustainability angle and the impact on local communities. I think if places are just building tracks to get on the rotating calendar once every other year, once every few years even, that's a lot of displacement and disruption to local communities, to countries, to cities, to regions, etc., if those tracks aren't being repurposed and used in the interim. Because I think if you think about some of the tracks where this has happened, for example, the Korea track that was built and then used in 2010 through 2013 for the Korean Grand Prix, it's really only used now for a couple domestic motorsport competitions, but I imagine that space could be better used for other purposes, repurposed, or just like better utilized in general, and probably cost a ton of money, displaced people. It's definitely something worth thinking about. I was also in India last month and I drove by the Formula One track there, which was similarly only used in F1 from 2011 to 2013, and it doesn't really host many events these days. So I don't want places to just be building up tracks with the hope that they're going to be getting a spot on the calendar every other year, every few years, and then not having that be a long-term sustainable value add to where that is or being repurposed for other things. So that's just a little bit of a side tangent on what I hope doesn't happen. And one more honorable mention on the racing side of things is the 11th team situation. I expect we'll get much more info on the GM and Cadillac project. I think adding two more seats to the grid is a big deal, and that's going to play into the driver market for 2025 and some of the announcements we'll see if this does come to fruition. But I think regardless of where you stand on another team entering, it's exciting to have two more seats on the grid. And I'll get a little later to maybe some of the economics of that, but I for one am over the moon about hopefully having GM and Cadillac join. Could your daily routine be full of hormone disruptors? There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now, in our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, and they all mess with our hormones. To combat this, we've been loving Hormone Harmony from Happy Mammoth, which contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens that help the body adapt to any stressors. With over 30,000 reviews and counting, a bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code PADDOCKPROJECT at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code PADDOCKPROJECT for 15% off today. Let's transition to the business side of things. Number one for me is shifting media rights in terms of the landscape of media when it comes to sports. And this is not just Formula One. I expect at least one big announcement this year that changes the places or the way we watch F1. ESPN's deal is up at the end of the year. They own the media rights to Formula One in the States, obviously Sky Sports. F1 TV is its own product. One thing that's interesting to me is Netflix getting more and more into live sports. We've seen what Apple has done with MLS. We've seen what Netflix has done with the NFL and the Christmas Game Day situation. could they be a contender for a piece of the F1 pie in some way? I don't know if that means, you know, hosting all the live games, but with the big Drive to Survive connection through Netflix, they could move a little bit more into the live coverage space. And I'd be very, very curious what that looks like. What about like a Netflix Vegas situation? F1 owns that race. They are the promoter of that race. Could we see Netflix do like a live Vegas thing this year? I don't know, but I think it's very worth keeping our eye on that space. Number two, Concorde agreement negotiations. Another agreement that is up at the end of 2025 is the current version of the Concorde agreement. So as a reminder, the Concorde agreement is what defines the governing and commercial rules of Formula One. It's often talked about in the context of cost caps, of the terms for adding an 11th team, relevant financial things, all sorts of businessy related things. What changes could we see in the revenue sharing, the governance, the team participation? F1 is in discussions with Liberty Media over what this might look like. No idea what those discussions are, what kind of shape they're taking, but I think it's going to be interesting to see how they develop over the course of this season. And what's interesting about the Concorde agreement, I think, is that most people credit Drive to Survive as the main factor for F1's huge increase in value, huge growth. But some argue that the Concorde agreement had just as much, if not more, to do with that increase in value because it's made teams financially viable by limiting costs. Before, I think F1 teams were just spending out the wazoo and probably were not profitable for the most part. But I think the Concorde agreement, in large part, has made these teams more investable. We're seeing more people come into the sport, more people invest in it, all those things. I think it's going to be interesting to see how the Concorde agreement evolves with that. Will there be concessions for new teams, or will the existing teams continue to demand high anti-dilution fees as we see GM enter and all these other things? How will sustainability targets, how will cost caps, or just a push for a more competitive grid factor into the new agreement? So going to be fun to watch. Another trend I think worth thinking about on the business side of things is this direct to consumer shift for F1. I think we're slowly starting to see the wheels turn on that, with Vegas and F1 being the sole promoter for that, or even just like the Peanuts collab, F1 selling their own merch in Vegas instead of it just being the teams, or licensing it out to PacSun or whatever it may be. I think F1 is starting to go direct to fans versus some of these other more secondary removed, instead of some of these other more like one step removed channels. And I think in 2025, we should expect to see F1 announce more or do more things that are more fan centered, more direct to consumer. I think F1 probably wants to claim its audience more than it has in the past. This all, I think, is largely in the hands of Liberty Media and their plans for growth. So they have a new CEO after Greg Maffei stepped down. It's going to be Derek Chang, which is very exciting. He's got an incredible background in media and entertainment, so it's going to be interesting to see how that impacts Formula One. Another storyline, women's sports, and particularly F1 Academy. I think there's this question broadly in sports and in women's sports, is it a movement or is it a moment? Is it a bubble that people are starting to care about the WNBA? Is it a bubble that people start to care about the NWSL? Now, obviously there's a long way to go on both of those things, but there is a lot of growing excitement and the Caitlin Clark effect. I wonder if some of that excitement for and success of other women's sports will rub off on F1 and F1 Academy, or at least increase the expectation that fans have in terms of holding F1 accountable for investing in these things. Motorsport has a long way to go when it comes to the pipeline. So it's not an apples to apples comparison. The number of young girls picking up a basketball or a soccer ball vastly outweighs the number of girls getting into a kart. Incredibly expensive, not very many opportunities. But the opportunities at the top of these sports are also vastly different scales. The WNBA has 144 roster slots. F1 Academy has had 15. The NWSL has over 350. So there's vastly different scale in terms of the pipelines, but it's still worth thinking about. And so things to look out for this year, the Hello Sunshine docuseries on F1 Academy, how will that impact these things? We had Dorianne on Jimmy Kimmel, which was amazing, but I'm not sure it got all the attention that it deserved. How will we get more media attention on these women? I think that's a big part of it and it's incredibly important. And What else does Susie Wolf have up her sleeve? I mean, she, I think, was looking to 2025 as a little bit of a inflection point or proof point for F1 Academy. So it's going to be cool to see what she potentially has up her sleeve. Obviously, we had a lot of big announcements in 2024, co-location, the sponsorship of Formula One teams. What else could be coming? And if you have ideas, I would love to hear them because I am fully rooting for F1 Academy's success. Lastly, on the business side, I think it's really hard to ignore the incredible scale and importance of the LVMH deal in Formula One. It's the pinnacle of fashion and the pinnacle of motorsport, and I think we're just scratching the surface in terms of seeing what will come there. Some brands we've already had on the chopping block due to this deal, like Rolex, Ferrari Trento, which will now be Moët & Chandon and Tag Heuer instead of Rolex, of course. But what other LVMH brands want a piece of the F1 pie? Is LVMH trying to enter more into the sports market? And what does that look like? How do they use Formula One for that? How does sustainability factor into their partnership? That was kind of mentioned a little bit in some of the articles about the deal, but very curious to see how that trends and how that impacts the sport. So, with that, those are my thoughts on the 2025 storylines. I would love to hear your thoughts on the ones that I picked out, but also there are many others that I didn't get to, and so would love to hear what you think might be coming and what we should be paying attention to in 2025. So thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a very exciting episode.